Okay, so tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh, Shvat, and we will be celebrating 15 days after that, or on the 15th of the month, it will be Tu B'Shvat. And so I wanted to discuss, I was very fortunate to come across a sefer, a book that it says it's attributed to the Chalban. He was he's someone who lived, he's a contemporary, lived in this generation, a very big Kabbalist who lived in the Tel Aviv area in Givatayim. And you can go on YouTube and put in Chalban and you can see videos of him, clean shaven, Kabbalist, and with a very, just a real, lot of good energy, but also beautiful, very positive teachings. And so this
When did
is,
he live?
he what? Where?
When?
When he just passed away like 3 years ago. So it's very, like, if you go on YouTube, like, I'll send the link after, just so you can see who he was, like, how, just, it was like very, a lot of fun. In his class, he would stop and, like, have people come up and they would sing and dance, and then he'd go back into teaching. It was like, just start doing that. We'll, like, take a break and we'll start getting up and dancing and singing. And, but it was really very joyous, teaching. Very much like the idea of the connectivity, the closeness that we have with God. It's very, very, very sweet. So within that, the sefer, it's called the Talei Chaim. So I've been reviewing it, going over it. I did a couple of classes with some other friends of mine on it, and so I wanted to kind of really just put it together and see what's special about this holiday of Tu B'Shvat. It's kind of a mysterious type of holiday. And so we'll start with the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which makes a reference to it. And then we'll kind of also look at some ideas of laws that are related to trees and the fruits of the tree. And then from there, we're going to go a little bit deeper into the kind of the Kabbalistic ideas that lie behind, or perhaps, explain, give some color to what exactly these laws that we're going to be discussing that relate to trees and fruits, etc., like what's the underpinning of it? And then it will shed light, I think, onto the Tu B'Shvat holiday. So the Mishnah here, referenced in Rosh Hashanah, at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, it says there are 4 days in the year that serve as the new year, each for a different purpose. On the first of Nisan is the new year for kings. It is from this date that the years of a king's rule are counted. And the first of Nisan is also the new year for the order of the festivals, as it determines which is considered the first festival of the year and which is last. So we have Nisan, it makes Passover the first of the three holidays, Shavuot and then Sukkot. On the first of El is the first year for animal tithes. All the animals born prior to that date belong to the previous tithe year and are tithed as a single unit, whereas those born after that date belong to the next tithe year. Okay. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon said, the new year for animal tithes is on the first of Tishrei. Okay, fine. Now the third of the Rosh Hashanahs, which is the one we call Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei is the new year for counting years, as will be explained in the Gemara, for calculating the sabbatical years and the jubilee years. I.e., from the first of Tishrei, there is a biblical prohibition to work the land during these years for planting. So we're going to use this time. I mean, the first of Tishrei is going to be the Rosh Hashanah for planting, for determining the years of Orla. What's Orla? That's the 3 year period from when a tree has been planted, during which time its fruit is forbidden, and for tithing vegetables, as vegetables picked prior to that date cannot be tithed together with vegetables picked after that date. And then, the last but not least, on the first of Shvat is the new year for the tree. The fruit of a tree that was formed prior to that date belonged to the previous tithe year and cannot be tithed together with the fruit that was formed after that date. This ruling is in accordance with the statement of Beit Shammai, but Beit Hillel say, the new year for trees is on the 15th of Shvat, Tu B'Shvat. So we always go by Beit Hillel. So we end up saying that the new year for trees is the 15th of Shvat. Okay, fine. So now we have this holiday called Tu B'Shvat, and we call it this the New Year for the trees. And in the lighter text, the dark text is the actual text of the Mishnah, and then this explanation is brought down. It's a Steinsaltz translation. So they're giving us the commentary, the practical application of what it means to be the new year for trees is the idea that the fruit that was formed prior to that date belongs to the previous tithe year, and then comes the 15th of Shvat. Anything after is a new year in terms of tithing. Okay, so now, let's talk about tithing for a second. So when it comes to tithing, we have something called Truma. We have something called Maaser Rishon, Trumas Maaser, Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. And so what are those things? So in general, when we have a crop, when we complete the processing, we bring in the crop it's collected and brought to, let's say, it sees the front of our house, and we then are responsible to take off truma, which is 2%, 1-2%, given to the Kohen. Then we take off Maaser Rishon, which is 10%. We give that to the Levite, to the Levi. And then off of that 10%, the Levite has to give 10% to the Kohen. That's called Trumat Maaser. And truma in general is handled with a very high level of sanctity, whereas the Maaser is on a lower level. And the truma can only be eaten by a Kohen. And the Trumat Maaser is the same idea. It's part of the truma family. The Maaser of the Maaser Rishon, which is given to the Levite, after he takes off the truma, it can be eaten by anybody. And then you have Maaser Ani and Maaser Sheni. Maaser Ani and Maaser Sheni are the same thing. It's 10% that's taken off the remainder. In the Shemitah cycle, the seven-year cycle, it's the third and sixth years of that cycle that the 10% that's taken off is called Maaser Ani. It's given to the poor. But the remainder, the other years, besides the third and the sixth, I mean the first, the second, the fourth, and the fifth years, we take that Maaser, it's called Maaser Sheni, and the person's obligation is to take that up to Jerusalem and eat it in Jerusalem. So the kind of we have a system of where we're where we have this a cycle of where we're you know the farmer has to take up their has to take their things up to Jerusalem to eat it there. And so this kind of like in the system is forcing us to have to come and visit Jerusalem. Fine. So that's called Maaser Sheni. So now there's an additional thing which comes up here, which we saw that when it comes to the Aleph Tishrei, which is what we call Rosh Hashanah, as we observe Rosh Hashanah, the new year of for human beings, as opposed to the new year for the trees. And so it says in the first of Tishrei, it's for counting years, for the calculating sabbatical years, the Shemitah and the Yovel years, and for planting. So now what does that mean for planting? So we have this other idea. So we just said there's this idea of the Truma Maaser. There's also something for counting, which is going to help us determine something called Arla. The first 3 years of a tree's existence, any of the fruits that are grown from that tree are called Arla. They are completely forbidden. Arla. Then the fourth year, it's called Neta Ravai. It's the fourth, it's that which comes out of the fourth, the planting of the fourth, or what sprouts out of the fourth. And that's actually treated similar to Maaser Sheni. Again, similar to Maaser Sheni. What's Maaser Sheni? And it's that fruit that we have to take up to Jerusalem and eat in Jerusalem. So to the Neta Ravai, the output of a tree in its fourth year is something that you'd have to take and bring up to Jerusalem, to eat in Jerusalem, the walls of Jerusalem. The fifth year of a tree, now we are free and clear, and that is totally permitted. Okay, so now, when it comes to this, the counting, so how do you determine the age of a tree? So over here on the right side of the screen, you have with the Bar Tanura. So the Bar Tanura was a commentary on the Mishnah. It's a very important commentary on the Mishnah. And here he says, about what does it mean? Again, practically speaking, when we say that the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for netiyah, for planting, planting of a tree. So he says like this, if he planted a tree 45 days prior to the first of Tishrei, which are 2 weeks for taking roots, for the shoot, young tree takes root in 2 weeks, and then 30 days after taking root is considered a year. For 30 days in a year is considered to be a year, which is 45 days. So what does that, what does he mean? So really something 30 days before, it has to have 30 days in order for it to be considered part of the prior year, basically. But in order for it to be of something that has status as a planting, it takes 2 weeks for it to really take root. I like that, it's taking root. So it takes root, and then so 45 days prior to Rosh Hashanah, if that tree was planted 45 days before, that would be considered year one of the counting of the tree. So that means that for this 3 year, you know, to determine when 3 years ends, if you plant it 45 days before Aleph Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, that would be year one. Then you'd be starting second year, and then third year. By the third Rosh, by the second Rosh Hashanah, you're already entering into your third year, so that by the fourth, by the third Rosh Hashanah, you've entered fourth year of the cycle. So then you've finished the Arla thing, at least you would think on the surface. So let's continue. So when the first of Tishrei arrives, we count it as the second year of the years of fruit of trees for the first 3 years of the Arla cycle. And the Tishrei of the next year, we count it as the third year. And after the third year, when the first of the Tishrei arrives of the fourth year, if this plant formed recognizable fruit, they are still prohibited. Now, whoa, you would think that after it's gone through the three-year cycle, you've exited, and now you're into the fourth year, which we said is Netta Ravai. It's like that Masa Sheni type of fruit status. But he says something interesting here. He says, you know what happens? We actually have something weird. And that is, it's still prohibited from being consumed because of the fruit of the trees of the first 3 years of Arla. So even though Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah for planting, we have this transfer of Tu Bishvat is the new year for the tree, and this has already become a tree. Therefore, its year does not become renewed to leave the status of Arla fruit of the first 3 years until Tu Bishvat. So here's what's going on. So you have this like very interesting phenomenon, which is basically like this. We start counting a tree in terms of what we determine something to become a tree from Rosh Hashanah of the human being, right? Meaning we know that we are judged on Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei, is the Rosh Hashanah for human beings. Now we have this thing called a planting, which ends up, it ultimately would become a tree. It's counted like a human being from Aleph Tishrei, from the first of Tishrei, our Rosh Hashanah. But then on the back end of the cycle, when you're culminating year three using Tishrei, Aleph Tishrei, we say, oh, wait a second, hold on. This is no longer a planting. It's now becoming, its identity changes. It's now a tree. And as a tree, it's got a different Rosh Hashanah. What's that? Tu Bishvat. So now, Aleph Tishrei, Tu Bishvat, it goes like this. Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet, Shvat. So basically, four and a half months, basically, you're going to add on to your counting in order for this thing now to exit the 3 years of Arla. Okay? Now, I just want to throw this out there. What that word Arla is, there's another reference to Arla, which I'll just throw this out there and let it sit there, and then you can like let it percolate and think about it a little bit. But what we call in Hebrew someone who's uncircumcised is Arel. Same word. Arla, the fruit of the first 3 years of a tree's existence is called Arla. It's prohibited. There's also a word very similar root word arel, orla, or the arelut is someone that is the idea of not being circumcised. Okay, there's also an arelev, which is a person who has a hard heart, almost like a covered heart, is an arelev. So you have arla, that is the prohibited first three-year output of a fruit tree. You have an arel, which is a person, the non-circumcised, the uncircumcised. And number three is arel lev, one who has a covered heart. Okay, just throwing it out there. Perhaps there's a connection between those three. Okay, now, so we say that there is this weird idea of the counting of a tree at its inception is being counted similar to and using the same Rosh Hashanah as that of human beings, but that when it gets to a certain place, it transfers, it changes, and from it becoming from a planting, it now becomes a tree. So after 3 years of using Aleph Tishrei, the first of Tishrei, as its count, we actually now see fruit on it, and we say, wait a second, that fruit, in order for it to determine its 3 years of expending the Arla issue of whatever that means, so that's going to now become determined by the 15th of Shvat. Because you know what this is now? This is now a tree. It's no longer a planting, but now it's become a tree. And now that it's a tree, we have to count it by the Tu B'Shvat as opposed to Aleph Tishrei. Okay? So that's what happens here. He says, therefore, its year does not become renewed to leave the status of Orla fruit of the first 3 years until Tu B'Shvat. And from then on, if fruit form on it, it has the status of the fourth year fruit, which are to be consumed in Jerusalem. And the Tu B'Shvat of the next year, they have left from the status of the fourth year fruit when they form from here onwards. But Tu B'Shvat becomes now the demarcation line of what determines the year. Okay, and we see this idea when you're tithing, or there's this idea of, like, you know, making sure that this is year. That when you have produce that's coming off of a tree and you're going to tithe off of that, you're going to use that which comes from the same year. So if it's the next year, it has to be grouped together separately. And I'll just tell you parenthetically that the reason for that is that the underpinning of all of this is that each year, this is a Kabbalistic idea, but each year, when you look at the fruits are impacted by the rains that come prior. And that the idea of the rain is the blessing that's coming. So that the blessing that starts, we say that it goes like this, Tishrei, and we said Cheshvan. When we look at the idea of the rainy season in the land of Israel, it starts in Cheshvan, the initial rains, and then that rain will start to impact. So it goes Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet. By Shvat, we say that Tu B'Shvat is when the we actually start to see the impact of that year's rain. So that things start to percolate, and there's a change within the tree itself, and so that the fruits that are going to come out after Tu B'Shvat are that which was impacted from the rains that started in Cheshvan of that year. And so then we start looking at that cycle from Tu B'Shvat onward through that whole entire year as that which came from the blessing, we'll call the rain that's coming out, is the blessing that was started in that year. And so we look at the fruits, the output is going to be tied to the blessing and the rains that came from that specific year. And that the next year, when I want to start looking at the Truma and the Maaser and all that stuff that I'm going to dedicate to God, because I'm attributing it to the blessing that I got of this year. And that each year has unique blessings that come to it. And the Truma and the Maaser that I'm going to take off from that year's produce is always going to be unique to that year, because I look at each year as a unique standalone type of entities, type of period. And that the blessing that came, I'm going to give my Truma and my Maaser. I'm going to do my separation based on that specific year. So I see the blessing, and I recognize it, and I do my acts of separation and giving my truma, my miser, the things that I'm going to give back as a recognition for that blessing. It's going to be specific to each year. Each year is going to have its own specific separation and dedication. Okay, that's like a little bit going towards the Kabbalistic. But what we have to ask ourselves is, What the Mishnah is doing here, it's doing something very interesting. I mean, and it actually extends into the halachic practice, and that is starting in the count of the human being and then making a move from the counting of the Rosh Hashanah, as we call Rosh Hashanah for ourselves, and then moving from there into this new thing called the Rosh Hashanah for the trees, right? So it's going from human being counting to having something called a tree, which has its own identity. So in that process, what it's doing is it's actually kind of saying to us in the halachic, it's like an expression in halachic, structure. It's saying that there's somehow this deeper connection between us, the human being, and the trees. So much so that the beginning of a tree's existence is going to be more closer to the human being, and then for it to like kind of have its, taking on its own identity, so to speak, okay? So that's one thing. Number two is that one of the things we have to actually make note of on the halachic side is that these laws that we're talking about specifically are in the land of Israel. Orla, like if you plant a tree in New Jersey, you don't have orla issues. Whereas this is unique to the land of Israel. Truma and Meiser also. We separate for things that are grown in the land of Israel. So we have to think about why is that the case, okay? The third thing is that why would it be that the first 3 years of the growth of a tree, why would that be off limits? Like what's wrong with, what's happening here that we're basically saying, this is how you would say it, they're not kosher. You can't eat the produce, the 3 years of fruit that come out of the tree, first 3 years, they're not kosher. Why would the first 3 years of growth from a tree not be kosher? I was actually looking at a bottle of wine. It says that there's no concern of arla in the grapes that were grown for this bottle of wine. So, it's something that we have to be cognizant of because the outgrowth of those first 3 years are a problem. And the fourth year also, it's mice or sheni type stuff. You got to bring it up. The netar avai has got to be brought in, eaten in Jerusalem. So those, at least the three, and then the fourth year is kind of like a hybrid of sorts. Why would it be? What is it about those first 3 years of a tree? Okay. So we have the first thing is this idea of the connection between us, the human being, and the tree. Okay. So let's take a look at the creation story because we always have to go back, so to speak, to the beginning of time. Okay. So take a look at this.
So does fruit need to be qualified as being kosher?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when you walk through the Shuk in Jerusalem, okay, this is just an example, but it's not limited to this, but I'm just saying you'd notice this because it's pretty much like every stall you go to, if you look closely, there's a kosher thing. There's a kosher certificate. It says these fruits and vegetables are kosher. So like you're like, what does that mean? It's because they had to have Truma and Meiser taken off of them. And if you don't have Truma and Meiser taken off of them, that's a problem. It's also not kosher. So in Israel, in order for fruits and vegetables to be kosher, they have to have been processed properly, meaning that you have to take off the Truma and the Meiser. You have to make sure it's not Arla. It's not the first 3 years of the output of a new tree. And Netar Avai, right? So this is like, the stakes are much higher over here. Like I remember once we went to Costco in America and there were peppers. And it said, produce of Israel. It's like, uh-oh, wait a second. Did they take off the Truma Meiser from these peppers? So the answer to that is that you got to take off the Truma and the Meiser. So we did it, as to play it safe, we took off the Truma and the Meiser because that would determine whether the fruits and vegetables coming out of Israel are kosher or not. So, and if you look at the back, again, take a bottle of wine that comes from Israel, and you'll see, it says on them, no concern of Arla and that type of thing. So, and Trumas and Maisos as well. Okay, so that's, that's like what they say, like practically speaking, it's very much something that we're cognizant of today. Okay, so what do we have? So let's just go.
So are you saying that there are
producers in Israel that don't do that?
That's what I'm saying. That's possible, yes, that there are people that are, I mean, overall, they're pretty careful about it, but there are definitely, yeah, I think that it's possible that there are, like everything, yeah. I know that there are definitely non-kosher wines that come out of Israel, you know? Like I saw that at the airport last time I was going through duty-free, and I noticed, like they have now, like that's my new thing. I go into the duty-free and I look at the wines because there are good deals on Israeli wine there. And I did notice one label that did not have, now why it wasn't kosher, that just might be they weren't careful about like how they were processing it. But it's possible that the Truman Meiser thing or Arla, you know, who knows? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing there, but they didn't qualify. So, yeah, so it's an issue. Now, practically speaking today, this is, we call it rabbinic in its nature because we don't have, although it's kind of moving, like there's this issue of having a majority of the Jews in Israel for these things to, so this, the answer to that question is yes, it only applies, this Arla for sure is a specific to the land of Israel, okay? Truman Meiser as well. We don't do Truman Meiser on, except there were certain like locations like in the north, like in Syria, the question was whether or not Truman Meiser would apply, but this is a unique to Israel type of thing. There is something else called the Chadash, and that people say applies everywhere, challah as well. Like when you have the big bake, the challah bakes, you take challah. That's something that we observe everywhere, not just in Israel. Okay. So now, the first question we have to ask, okay, we're talking about Tu B'Shvat. What is the connection between tree? Like, why all of a sudden are we counting the beginning of a tree's life from that of the same way that we observe Rosh Hashanah for us? For the day of judgment of a human being. So we go to the creation story, okay? So look at this. So the creation story, it says here, this is chapter 2. There's, it's interesting, when you look at the creation story, there are different, like, steps. There's Adam 1, Adam 2, Rav Soloveitchik in his, in one of his books, he talks about Adam 1, Adam 2. If you look at the narration of the creation story, Adam and Eve and their creation, it comes in, it's not just one time. There's like different versions to express different elements, aspects of the human being, the physicality of a human being as opposed to its spiritual. So here in the second go-around, it says like this, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created on the day that the Lord God made earth and heaven. No tree of the field was yet on the earth, neither did any herb of the field yet grow, because the Lord God had not brought rain upon the earth, and there was no man to work the soil. So basically, it's like Rashi says, like the world was in suspension. It was waiting for the creation of man. And a mist ascended from the earth and watered the entire surface of the ground. And the Lord formed man of dust from the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the soul of life, and man became a living soul. So this description of the creation of Adam, of man, is more of the spiritual aspect, that God blew into him a soul. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden from the east, and he placed there the man whom he had formed. So now God creates man, he creates a spiritual being, and he puts him into the garden. What do you have next? And the Lord God caused to sprout from the ground every tree pleasant to see and good to eat, and the tree of life in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So right there, you have man placed into the garden, and then what do you have? You have the growing of trees, okay? Vayitzmach, the growth, the netia, the idea of a planting is here. So man into the garden, and then you have the sprouting of, right, from the Adama, from the ground, from the earth, every tree pleasant to see and good to eat. And also, what do we have? The tree of knowledge, right? So like you have, it's a setup here of man and tree, and almost like, and you see that nothing grew until man came in. The spiritual being is placed, and then you have the tree. And the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. Perhaps the tree of life and the tree of knowledge are the same. It's a lot of fun discussion about that. But you see this right here in the text, this very deep connection between man and tree, and specifically, not tree yet, but the idea of the growth of a tree. Vayitzmach, he caused to sprout, God caused to sprout from the ground every tree, okay? So now we go back to the Mishnah, at least right here I can understand that when we start out at the beginning of the life of a tree, how am I going to count that tree in terms of its development? At least at the beginning, it's going to be tied in to the creation of man. Well, when was man created? Man was created on Aleph Tishrei. The first of our Rosh Hashanah is a commemoration of the creation of man. So now we fast forward. When we're going to commemorate Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei, the beginning of a year, when is that? From the creation of man. And guess what? When I start counting the cycle of a tree's life, you know when I start counting it? Not from Tu B'Shvat. I start from the first of Tishrei. But we're going to see that there's a transition that happens. It goes from there to when we want to say that the culmination of Arla, which we still haven't figured out. What is Arla? What's going on with Arla? Like, where does that come from? But at least now I see, at least I've answered my question on a deep level. Where does this beginning? Why do they start from the same place? So that Aleph Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, is not just Rosh Hashanah for man, but also for the beginning of the tree's cycle. Okay? But we see that there is a transfer away, and that is from Tu B'Shvat. Okay? So we have to figure out that we explained, at least, this idea that Tu B'Shvat is when the beginning, meaning the blessing of that year, the rains of Cheshvan, we start to see that in the tree's movement, in terms of the sap moving into a place of where there's going to be a beginning of the growth of fruits, that's happening on Tu B'Shvat. Okay, so we explain that at least, you know, that there's a move, but we still have to figure out what is this Arla thing. Okay, so we did make a reference to this idea that Arla is connected to Arel. Arelut is the idea of someone who's not circumcised. So there's something about that. We talked about Arel Lev, someone who's got a heart that is covered. That is, right? So that there's something about Arelut means something that's, there's some kind of negative spiritual something or other that's going on in reference to this status of something called an Arel. Okay, now, in this, just to continue on the story of the creation, so it talks about the rivers that came out from Eden, and then it says that now the Lord God took the man and he placed him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to guard it. La'avda u'lishamra. And then he says to man, he says, you can eat from all of the trees in the garden except for one, the tree of knowledge. Because the day that you eat from it, you will die. And then we have the creation of Eve. She's brought onto the scene because it's not good that man should be alone. And so in the process of trying to, first, he lets man discover in a sense that he is alone. And at that point, that's when he brings him Chava, Eve, and he builds her. So there's this idea of the creation of Eve. Now, in the first depiction of this, it actually kind of gives us this idea that man originally was created male and female in one. And here in the second version is this idea of like almost like a splitting off and creating two entities that come back together to be one. Okay, so fine. And therefore, it says, it actually, this description of like when a man and a woman come together, they're coming back together. They had once been together, and they're brought back together when they come together to form a couple. Okay. So then we have the story of the sin. Okay, next chapter. It says that we have the snake that comes on the scene, and then we have the sin where they eat from the tree. Okay, so then what happens? So God says, what happened here? They hear God, they go for cover, they realize that they're naked, and it says they hear God and they run away, and then God calls out to them. And what happened here? Everybody passes the buck, and you have the punishments that are given out. First, the snake is punished, then the woman is punished, and then Adam is punished. And it says there, when it says to man, he said, because you listened to your wife, and you ate from the tree from which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed be the ground for your sake. So now, because of the sin, arurah adama b'varecha, so the ground is now punished. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. The ground is now punished. And then it also says, now remember, man is coming from the ground. And perhaps that's really, if you think about it, on the deepest level, the fact that man was created from the adama, from the ground, right? Afar min adama, we are from the ground, we're from the earth, we're dust of the earth. And so our actions, now we could see where his actions very much adversely impact the adama, so much so that God says, the adama is cursed because of you. Okay? And so too, so now in a way, think about this. Now the tree and the fruits are really output of the adama, right? So like what comes out from the ground, the tree and the fruit are, in a sense, that what's latent in the earth, it's in a sense the tree and the fruit are an expression of the outgrowth of the adama, of the earth. So now, through the creation story, we see this very deep connection between man and tree. We just saw the fact that one came after the other, almost like one was an outgrowth of the other. Without man, there was no one there to pray or recognize that there was something missing. Man comes on the scene, trees start to grow. So like you see a very deep connection between the two. Man sins, now the earth is very much punished, cursed because of his actions. And listen to what happens. At the end of this, Hashem says, and the Lord God made, the Torah says, and the Lord God made for Adam and his wife, shirts of skin, and he dressed them. Okay? What are these kotnos or? Kotnos or vayal bishem. So the rabbis tell us that what actually happened, this is pretty wild, that Adam, when he was created initially, had no foreskin. It's only after the sin of eating from the tree that one of the things that came about was that now you had, that man was created with the foreskin. Initially, no foreskin. So that, and what do we call that? A person who has a foreskin is called an arel. Okay? So now, we talk about the tree that when it initially grows, those first 3 years, its production, the fruits that come out of it are called arla. So it's explained by the Zohar. The Zohar tells us that, what is this arla? What does it mean that a tree in its first 3 years, its output is called arla? And he explains that what's coming out is that at the time of this sin, and it says that the adama was cursed, it ended up that there was a certain, toxic element was inserted into the ground. So there was a certain toxicity that's there and needs to be pulled out of the ground. Now, we said earlier that what? That these laws of Arla only apply where? To the land of Israel. So why would that be? So what we talk about, the sanctity of the temple, the Temple Mount, right? It's a little bit in the news. What is so special about the Temple Mount? So on the Temple Mount, we know that it's a dome of the rock. There's a rock there. That rock is called the accretion stone, the Evan Shasia. That is the place where the world was, the creation of the world, of the physical world, starts there. So the power of creation is and sanctity of that act is there, and like the sanctity of the place, it derives its sanctity from that place. It's the seat of creation, the seat of the kedusha, of the sanctity of the land. So the closer we get to that place, the more the sanctity. As the Mishnah and Kalim says, that when we measure levels of sanctity, that is the most holy. The Holy of Holies is where that rock is. And so it's at the time of creation. So when Adam eats from the tree, I'm not sure if the tree sat there, but it's in that locale that the Adama, the land, the earth that was affected by that act, as it said that the earth was cursed, its biggest and most toxic, you know, let's call it the, you know, you have a nuclear disaster, and like, right, you have everything is like, it has that after effect of the post nuclear fallout. So here we're saying that the land of Israel took it the hardest and has the most toxicity in its land from a spiritual perspective. And
wait,
so,
wait, one
yeah.
So the rock actually exists. If you went into the Dome of the Rock, if you see a rock, an
yeah.
actual rock.
There's a huge stone there, yes. Go online and put in Dome of the Rock or put there, and you'll see there's actual, I don't know if there's footage, but there's definitely, yeah, there's pictures they have of that rock.
Of the actual rock.
Yes. Yeah, it's a huge, huge rock.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And what is this about? Go back. What you said a second ago. The toxicity of the land. Suddenly, the
okay.
Land is toxic.
So right. So when I'm. So I'm not saying. Wait. So I'm not saying that. Like, if you were to take the earth and measure it from our, it's not actually toxic.
No. I know that. But what do you mean? What's wrong with the land?
Okay.
From a spiritual slash.
From a spiritual perspective, when Adam and Eve ate from the tree, the Torah tells us that God told Adam, because of this act, the earth is now cursed. And so, just so we like in a, there was a spiritual ramifications, let's just say, of that act of going against the will of God of don't eat from this tree. God says now that earth is cursed, that there was some kind of damage or some kind of spiritual negative energy that was implanted into the earth. Okay? So much so that the explanation from a Kabbalistic perspective is that the understanding of this idea of Arla is coming from this. So let's take a look at this quickly here. I'm going to Vayikra Yud Tes to chapter 19, verse 23. It says, when you come to the land and you plant any food tree, you shall surely block its fruit from use. It shall be blocked from you from use for 3 years, not to be eaten. And in the fourth year, all of its fruit shall be holy, a praise to the Lord, which we called Netar Ravai, and that you have to bring up to Jerusalem. And in the fifth year, you may eat its fruit, okay? So that, and it says, and then it's and to do this in order to increase its produce for you. I am the Lord your God. So what's this about? What is this idea that when you come to the land and you plant fruit trees, you can't eat from its fruit for the first 3 years? Arelim lo yeachel. It's because it has this element in that is coming out from the land that goes back to the initial mess up of Adam and Eve. So that when God says the land is cursed, it was implanted into the land of Israel, and that there's now a need to pull that out from the land. And it runs parallel, because when it says that when Adam sinned, he was given these kotnot or, that one of the elements that happened to man there is that he now has a foreskin that has to be removed. Because there's something, there's a, what are these, what is this idea? It's that there's something that's blocking between us and God. And so it's expressed like I said to you, this idea of arel lev, when a person has a heart that has some kind of foreskin, it means that there's some blockage. So we see in the physical realm of a foreskin, and this idea that there's something that's been implanted into the earth called arla, or not really arla, but what's coming out when the earth, now you have a tree and it grows fruits. It's an expression of what was latent and deeply embedded within the earth, that there's something that's still of a negative energy that's there implanted in the earth that comes out and is expressed in the tree and the outgrowth of a tree, its fruits. So that the first 3 years, the way it's explained is that God, in his goodness to us, this is based on the Zohar, and that he, again, like I said, a Kabbalistic approach to this here, right, is that God didn't want us to eat from those fruits because it has this spiritual negative energy that's there, that's coming out, that's being pulled out of the ground in those first 3 years. And so as a protection to us, we don't want to ingest it because it's going to somehow have a negative spiritual impact on us, okay? And so therefore, similar to that idea of something that has been, you know, in a sense, if we're saying that this is all kind of running parallel, so then the same way that you have this foreskin with man, you have this element of negative energy that's in the ground that needs to be pulled out. So the Chabad, he explains, and all again, all this I'm telling you is like formulated from his writings. He says that that this is the idea of planting trees in the land of Israel, because what we're doing is as we plant the trees, and as the trees come up, each of these trees in their first 3 years, they're pulling the negative energy out, so that by the fifth year. And in the fifth year, you may eat its fruit. Do this in order to increase its produce for you. I am Lord your God. Lo sif lachem tivuaso. Like this idea of extra, more, increase. Why? Because as you do this process of planting and pulling out that zuhama, it's called like this negative, you know, elements that were put there from the sin, that as you go through this process, you're fixing, you're bringing a tikkun to the land. So I was like, it's amazing. Like, you know, one of the things that like we've seen, like there's this push to plant trees in the land of Israel, right? So it you know, I don't know if it was done intentionally, but here we see this idea of through the process of planting these trees and letting them grow through the 3 year cycle to the fourth to the fifth, you're in a sense it's rectifying this initial damage that was done when Adam ate from the tree all the way back at the beginning of time. It actually is interesting. He says that if you look in Tanakh, the land of Israel is referenced as Canaan, Eretz Canaan. And that's kind of like the Canaan, if you go back, is Cham. Noah had three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafet. And Cham was cursed. His son Canaan was cursed. So you're talking this land, which is now this holy place, is being referenced to the one who's cursed because the nature of the land was cursed. He says it only started to go through the process of its rectification when Abraham came. Now, what's interesting is it says in the Bris HaBeinu sermon, when God is talking to Abraham, making promises, and they're doing their covenant there, it says it's not until the fourth generation because the sin of the people there is, they haven't sinned, whatever it is, it's in the fourth generation that you'll be able to, your kids will come back. So what's that reference to the fourth? If perhaps it's this idea of Netta Ravai, this idea of the fourth year of the cycle of the growth of a tree. But what the Chabad says on that is that Abraham's coming into the land was the beginning of a rectification of this issue, of these issues. And that it's going to be a continuous thing. It's not going to be just a one-time thing. But he says that in the end of days, one of the signs that the time of the messianic, you know, it's not the Messiah comes and boom, it's, but rather it's a messianic age, that one of the things we'll notice is that we'll have this amazing, you know, growth of output of the produce in the land of Israel. And so seeing, let's say, the explosion of wineries, and let's say this, you know, very, very, you know, very, you know, successful, you know, agricultural,
Do you think we're in it?
I'll tell you that it's the Chabad says that when you see, he says it this way, he says the more of this kind of growth that you see, it's a sign that, you know, again, if we take a step back, and what we're really saying is that from the time of Adam and Eve and everything that happened there, and this creation of a situation of where we now are in a process of rectification. What we're doing is, what happened, let's just take a step back. What happened at the sin there is that you now have a human being that has within themselves both good and bad. We have an incredible spiritual being, and we also have our animal instincts, and they're all mixed together. And that's really what happened at the time of Adam and Eve's eating from the tree, that it became internalized. And so now you have this conflict that's always there that we all like struggle with. We want to be good. We have this incredibly powerful spiritual, called the neshama, that's there, and that it's very lofty. And then we have also, we know that we're capable of being the most, you know, very animalistic and you know, all this, these different energies mixed together that are conflicting. And so too the land itself, the land of Israel, is an expression of these things as well. So that through this, you know, planting of trees and this type of cycle of the 3 years to the fourth to the fifth, that it's pulling that out. And as we do that, we slowly but surely get to a place of blessing, and what blessing would be in a sense, I would say it this way, is if Arla is an expression, or the Arel, or Arelev, I go to the heart thing, the idea that there's something that's blocking, there's a, you know, a thing that's in the way of us connecting with God, it just should be easy for us to connect to God. And that's when, you know, pre-sin, Adam was completely connected. And then through the sin, there was a distance that was created. There's now a barrier, so to speak. And so this process that we're working through is to be able to get those, you know, the lines of connectivity back in order. And so, you know, this process of the tree, 3 years, once it's done with that, it's now like, it's to the Adama, it's to the place of where the earth is in a pristine, very, you know, healthy place spiritually, you know? So, and you know, you start to watch these things. So like we're going to like a, you know, through a process, so that once things start to flow, it's like you go back 100 years. You came to the land of Israel. It was like it was a, you know, a swampland, right? It was a mess. And so, but it says that when the Jews come back, and things will, you know, there's the land responds, and you know, all of a sudden the growth that's coming is this way that he's describing here of, you know, it has to go through this element of 3 years of pulling that negative impact from the original sin. And then things start to flow, and you see that things are like, you know, flowing through. But one thing that's very important, he says that what we see here in the physical realm is really a reflection of what's going on in the upper world of the spiritual. And so that when we see things flowing nicely in this way, where we see the outgrowth and the output of the crops, in a way that we're seeing, that it's really indicative. It's showing us that above, in the upper realms of the spiritual realms, there's something good happening as well. So that what we see below, the blessing is indicative of a spiritual realm of things being in a good place up above as well. So it's not all perfect, right? So we still have a ways to go, but it's the signs of a very, very positive, very positive thing. So now, one of the things he also says is that if you think about it, Tu B'Shvat, it's the 15th of Shvat, 30 days later is the 15th of Adar, which is Purim. And so if Purim is about Amalek, which is also like this idea of, you know, our arch enemies in terms of skepticism and negativity in the spiritual realm, so the beginning of like the sprouting of the positive flow of energy that's coming at Tu B'Shvat is, you know, 30 days before our ability to overcome the elements of Amalek. So like the idea of like all these things are connected. So it starts with the rains of Cheshvan, and it goes through that cycle where we get to Tu B'Shvat is the beginning of the percolating of that year's, if the blessing that came through the rains, and we receive that, it comes into the ground, and it's now expressed through the sap moving through the trees in Tu B'Shvat. And so now all that outgrowth is reflective of the blessing of that year. And so then it leads us towards, like, you know, Adar, and then Tishrei, and then, you know, Passover, Pesach, like, you know, the idea of redemption to redemption. So it's starting with our being able to receive the blessing and that flow through. So Tu B'Shvat is like very much, it's very much a hidden holiday in a sense. Like the messages are pretty much Kabbalistic in many ways. You see it in the halacha. It's expressed in the fact that you start counting at the beginning of Tishrei for the cycle of the tree, only for it to be passed into Tu B'Shvat. So you see, though, in halachic, you know, laws of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah being the beginning of the counting of how you count the tree to where it becomes a really from a sapling to a tree, it transfers from Aleph Tishrei to its own thing called Tu B'Shvat. And it's, in a sense, Tu B'Shvat is that time of rectification. And so it becomes the time when does Arla end? It ends at Tu B'Shvat. It's like that's like the idea of the rectification of all this stuff that we talked about. And so, you know, the next phase of it is that we have the seven fruits. It's, you know, it talks about the idea of the, you know, the Shivaminim. I don't know if you know the seven species. So when it comes to like people do a Tu B'Shvat Seder, right, they're going to take out the seven species and they'll celebrate those things. And each one has a symbolic of a different thing. Eretz Chita, Sara, Begefen, Etenav, Eretz, like you have, you know, the wheat, you have the barley, you have the grape, you have the olives, you have the dates, you have all these, the Rimon, you have the pomegranate. So the seven species, it's all related to the Eretz, to the land of Israel. And so part of like that celebration of this is to recognize the fruits that are unique to this land and associated with the blessing. And so that therefore it's those that we determine which goes first in terms of order of hierarchy of blessing, tied to that pasuk, which is brought down. Hold on a second. Did I bring it? Did I copy it here? Hold on. Here. It's in the brought down the Gemara Brachos. It asks, like, which? How do we know which one to bless on first? So it brings down from this. It's based on this in Deuteronomy 8:8, and a land of wheat and barley, vines, figs, pomegranates, land of olive oil and honey, which are dates, date honey. So. In here, it's the land of a land, and so Eretz Chita Osara. The reason we would do the blessing after the meal based on eating of bread, why this would go first is because it's the closest to the land, and then you have barley, then you have wine, and then you have fig and pomegranate. Then it again has land, and then you have the idea of olives and dates. So whichever is, and then the Gemara is saying, like, which one goes first, depending on its proximity to the Eretz, to the land. Okay. But the fruits, though, would end up being, like, the outgrowth of, ultimately, what's deeply rooted in the land. So, like, what makes these fruits special ultimately brings it back to the fact that they're connected to the land. And you see that.
I want to hear more about the rock. I bet that's unbelievable.
You never heard about the rock?
I knew it was there, but I'm like, I was like, wait a minute, I guess I knew that, but like, there's an actual rock like that. Like, if you touched it, what would happen to you? Like, would you like?
So it says that, like, I mean, it was high stakes. You would go in there. The only person that went in there was the Kohen Gadol, and he went in there once a year. And if he wasn't in the proper state of spirituality,
he would die.
Yeah, it was not a good. In the second temple, there were like many different. There were many. High priest because they didn't last.
So let me ask you, I'm sorry to distract you from your car thing, but I'm still stuck on the rock thing. But like, because I live in Glen Rock, if it were open today, like if you go there, would you go?
No, you can't. You're not allowed to go there.
Well, what if like the doors of that dome were open and the
in a funny way, it's a blessing that we can't go in there because it's not, you're not supposed to go in there from a spiritual perspective. That's a whole question of whether or not you're allowed to go up to the Temple Mount, right? Because we don't know.
Suddenly, people are going.
Right. So the answer is that there are opinions that say that the places that they're going are okay because they're not. That's not where those are outside the areas that are restricted. Let's just say it that way from a spiritual perspective, right? But there are different. There's a great story. This is Howard Schultz, right? He was one of the
CEO of Starbucks. Right?
Correct. So he tells us that they tell the story. He became very close with the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, Rav Nosson C. Finkel. The story goes back to where he and a group of businessmen, somehow they got to Nissen Zweifinkel, and they had a very, very like special experience with him, and he became very close with him. So Howard Schultz comes to Israel on a for a conference in Tel Aviv, and he's such a high profile person that it was reported that he was in Israel, and so the Rebbetzin calls Schultz and says, the rabbi wants to know why you are you upset at him. He says, why? Why are you saying that? He says, well, we heard you're in Israel and you didn't call us. So he's like, no, it's not that. He says, well, the rabbi wants to see you. So he changed his whole itinerary. He's able to come. He came to Jerusalem to see the rabbi. So they got together and they spoke, whatever it is, they got together. And then afterwards he says, you know, what else are you doing? He says, well, I was like, wait, I said, I'm going to go to the Kotel. He says, okay, great. I'll meet you there at the Kotel. So Rav Nissen Zweifinkel had Parkinson's. He had a very hard time walking. But he said, I'll meet you over at the Kotel. So Schultz went to the Kotel, waited for the rabbi. The rabbi shows up, and he helps him walk towards the Kotel. And they get to a certain point, and the rabbi stops. And Schultz looks at him and says, Rabbi, is everything okay? He says, yeah. Everything's fine. He says, but I can't go. I don't go any closer to the – this is where I stop. So he says to him, why? He says, I'm not worthy of going closer. Now, what was he referring to is he probably had like a tradition that there was a certain, or it could only go so close, and that if you went closer, it might have been an issue because however he understood it, he stopped where he was. So Schultz is telling this over an interview. He goes, this is like the holiest rabbi I know, and he's not worthy. He's just explaining, like, this is like humility. You know, like, here's this guy, this holy person, he's not worthy. Like, he's like, wow. But there's this idea that there's certain parts that maybe you can't go to. It's obviously a unique position. Most people, yeah. If not everybody, pretty much goes up to the wall, etc. But that was just a fun story from this idea of not getting too close to certain parts of where the temple was. Okay, but there are different opinions, and that's how we roll. So like there are people that like I have friends that go up there every week. You know, and they go to certain areas, and there are certain areas they don't go to. So, but the idea of like what the Chaban talks about in this piece is of this idea of like the sanctity of the land of Israel and the sanctity of the temple is very much from the sanctity of the land. That the land has that sanctity, and it therefore impacts that which is built around it. So that so much so that he says that where the tabernacle was holy, in the and its vessels were holy. And its kedusha, its holiness came from the vessels. It's the opposite. When it came to the temple, it's the land that's has that embedded is has that you know the sanctity, and it in turn impacts the things that are around it. So that it gives the temple, it infuses the temple with its sanctity. But the idea of that is that the land has this incredible sanctity, and therefore you have these laws like Truma and Maaser and Arla, all these different things, these laws that are unique to the land, because it's an expression of, we see here, this idea of the, you know, the issue of, on the negative side, the Arla is like showing that there was an impact from all the way back from the time of Adam that impacted the land and adversely that needs to be worked through. It's like every tree that's planted and has the fruits that come out of it are a process of working through and really eliminating, like cleansing the land from the original impact of the sin, which you see recorded in the Torah, that the Adama was cursed, the land was cursed because of the sin. And then, but you see, I think it's an amazing thing. You see from the beginning of the creation story, this amazing connection between man and tree. Right, so that there's something very deep about the concept of trees, in terms of this connectivity of what it means, like what the trees represent in terms of its ability to grow fruits and things of that nature, like very similar to a human being, our ability to like do things and make things grow, like in our lives, be able to do things in ways that can have incredible positive impact, that can you can plant seeds that are going to be, you know, grow for generations and generations after we're here on this earth. So let's leave it like that. So some ideas to think about when we come to Tu B'Shvat, the idea of taking and blessing the rains and the outgrowth of that, and dealing through, you know, some of the negativity that might have been implanted from the sin of the mixing up of these different energies. But ultimately, we see that there is an ability for us to come through and to be able to work through those things, and to ultimately, you know, we're on a path towards a much better place.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All right.
Thank you.
All the best, guys. Have a good week. And also, happy Rosh Chodesh. It starts tonight, Rosh Chodesh Shvat.
That's right.